Well, we don't have a hand up. However, Michael had said that he would be calling in. I'm going to turn on his mic. He might be, oh, he just put a hand up. So, okay, Mr. Tatey, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, folks. Are you hearing me
Welcome
okay?
in, man.
Thank you. You're hearing me. That's good. I hope the road
You're
noise
loud and
isn't
clear.
overwhelming. Good. Good, good, good. So nice
No,
to
you're good. You're
join.
loud and clear, and
How
I'll
you
keep my
doing?
voice loud and clear too. And
Wonderful. Just like old times, back on the show.
there you go. Extending love in your direction for anybody who doesn't hasn't been in touch with Michael, and many of you know him through Orlando and/or through the radio show. Michael's mom just passed recently, and so he's up on the road on his way to a family event. And so, what's on your mind for today, Michael?
Yes, thank you for the intentions, Michael. And been wanting to discuss with you for the longest time reality, actuality, and I know that you have touched upon this and Jeannie on the show and many times. And I've come to realize after, I think it's, what is it, coming up on 2 years? Knowing you all, somewhere around there. The
Right.
reality is, my reality is what I am making it in my brain. That's pretty much it. This is my
Well,
background, my prior experiences, that all forms my reality.
right. So reality, to be precise about it, we live in a world of actuality, this energy system in which we live, move, and have our being. And it is, who knows what all is there to be seen. We know that with our senses, we perhaps, it's been estimated, get to experience maybe as much as 1% of what's actually there, in terms of the what we call the material world. The scientists are telling us that at least 90% of the actuality, that is the planets, the whole solar systems, everything that we, that at least 95% of it is dark matter. And dark matter, scientists know nothing about, zero. So at least 95% of the universe, science itself is admitting, we don't know anything about 95% of it. So if we go back to the Harvard research that we've talked about to lay some groundwork for yourself, and I know this is a repeat for you, but for others who might be listening to the show, if we go back to the Harvard research, probably the most quoted psychological research in human history, was done back in the 50s, has never been refuted. And what they came up with was that in a time frame where brain cells fire, that'd be, it would be 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity happening in the brain, and the time frame is about a 25th of a second, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. It's been estimated that in that same time frame, there are perhaps 20 trillion, although we really don't have a clue. A reasonable lesson would be that there are perhaps 20 trillion bits in the actuality, in the creation as it actually is. 10,000 brain cells are firing, and in that time frame, the max amount of data that your structure has to produce its perceptual construct is 9 bits, and I have 9 bits. Now, of course, in order for our realities to be different, all I have to do is utilize a different 9 bits than you in order to produce my construct out of the 20 trillion plus who knows what potentially available. So obviously, oftentimes, our realities are not the same. And most people have mixed the two up, and they think that, well, I see something out there in the world, and I call that actuality. But in truth, you and I, nor has that. The eye is a one-way device. It is a receiver for information, light information. Our ear receives a different frequency range. And so we receive light energy coming into the eye, and that light energy carries information. And according to the information that it carries, it resonates brain cells in us. You know, 2,000 years ago, Yeshua said in order to understand his teaching, you had to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. I think we're safe in assuming that pretty much everybody in his audience had what we call physical eyes and ears. What he was saying is, you got to have the brain cells. So if he's got a particular set of brain cells firing and he uses words to convey that, if those words don't trigger the same brain cells in me as they do in him, then I have no comprehension of his meaning. If I don't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. I think it was Isaiah that started that idea when he says, those who having eyes do not perceive, and those who having ears do not hear. So they understood that reality was of the mind, and that actuality was something different. At least that would be my take. And so if I use a different 9 bits of information, whatever the information coming in, let's just use that single sense, the eye, whatever that information resonates in me, that resonance produces a picture, literally a construct of my mind that we'll call perception. And that construct is painted on the inside of my eyeballs. Now, we've been tricked because it's painted on the inside of our eyeballs that we're looking out there. But the eye is a one-way valve. It's a ludicrous thing when you understand the energy system. You know, we have a TV antenna on the roof of the house. It receives a signal. That signal is carried into the TV, and the TV produces a picture. Information, and we produce a picture. Off the back of the TV, and I'm going to look in the wires and see out through the antenna at what's going on in the neighborhood is a pretty silly statement, pretty silly thought. Well, it's no different to say that I'm seeing what's happening in the outer world. I see approximations. I see things that match. People whose realities don't even come close to what's happening in the actuality, we call them crazy. But their minds are showing them pictures that sometimes are not any crazier than yours or mine, especially if we're in any form of hostility or fear, because the mind is using, my take, the mind is using corrupt data in order to produce those realities. There's a powerful section in the Course in Miracles, the lesson, What is the World? And if you like, I'll send you a link. I think you've probably already got it, but if you don't, I'll send you a link to that lesson. I think it's one of the most important and most misunderstood lessons in the Course. But basically what it says is, perception, that is the ability to construct things in our minds and paint them on the inside of our eyeballs. Perception is a skill made up by us to take the place of the actuality, to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So perception in this case would equate the word reality, the constructs of my mind. And so now we have what in the ancient scriptures they called the mind of man. Man being Adamus, red clay. If you were to take the so-called physical body that you have and take it into a laboratory and hand it to them and say, here, break this down and tell me what it's made of. What they tell you is that the base element of your so-called body is what we call carbon. And carbon is an atomic structure that has 6 electrons, 6 protons, and 6 neutrons. You might recognize that number, 666. The mind of man, if you go back in one particular case, Yeshua is talking to Peter. You know, like Peter is the head henchman. I'm going to build everything on this foundation of Peter. And And then what he says, for you think in the mind of man, what I would substitute the mind that I'm using, and that is the mind that Yeshua used would be called the mind of Christ. So we have the constructs of carbon-based memory. What's stored in the your body's mind? Generational patterns that go on throughout all of your generations, each of us has. And when an event happens in the actual world, the energetic patterns that come in resonate whatever's stored in me, and my mind produces a reality, a perception, a construct out of carbon-based memory, the mind of man. That's what Yeshua was referring to as Satan. For you think in the mind of men. For you think in Adamos, the images that the red clay storage system produces as perceptions, rather than the plan of the Creator, rather than the actuality. And so, if we made up a whole world to take the place of what the Creator gave us, that is, we were locked into perception, the mind of man, perhaps a good exercise would be to be willing to let go of that. That, for me, was an insight, Michael, that came about probably a year and a half or so ago now, at which point I asked to have perception taken away from me. Like, I'm willing to let go of that whole construct thing and trust that the Creator's mind has got a whole lot better grasp on the actuality and what's best for any of us than carbon-based memory does, than perception and memory. So I've been asking for about a year and a half, and it's been quite effective, and I feel like it's really enhanced my life to say, I'm ready to be finished with memory, and I'm ready to be finished with perception. And I'm willing to trust that there's a mind in me, the same mind that this man used 2,000 years ago. You know, Paul talks about the mind of Christ in you, your hope of glory, your possibility is that you have the birthright to share in that same mind that Yeshua utilized 2,000 years ago, and it's not the mind of perception. Where we enter into the actuality, and we're willing to be instructed by that. And, you know, when they said, don't be conformed to this world, don't have your, in essence, don't have your perception conformed to this world. You'll notice there are a lot of specialists in the world that make sure every kid's perception is conformed to what the world believes and what the world holds to be true. And most of it's a fraud. Now, I can remember back, oh, probably 10 years ago, they had a quote that came out and said that, if I remember correctly, the numbers were 85% of the knowledge that was taught on a college level, this is about 10, maybe 15 years ago, 85% of what had been taught today that time on a college level, they had proven was not true. And so my offering is that anything in your perception or mind that is based in any form of hostility or fear is a construct of carbon-based memory. 666, the Antichrist, it goes against the mind of love in us, and it needs to be forgiven. And then we'll notice that the mind of man has made up a story about forgiveness. And what's the story? If you're in pain, it's somebody else's fault. And so what you do if you're in pain and it's their fault, you just be big about it, you forgive them, you let them off the hook for the pain that's moving in you, which of course does nothing to change the pain that's moving in you, and totally voids the idea of forgiveness, where forgiveness in Yeshua's terms, in Yeshua's Aramaic language, was how we remove from carbon-based memory those energetic patterns that don't belong there. And you hear the scriptures talking about, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. And that's, you know, in my awareness previously had been, that's kind of like a bleeding heart statement. I'm going to forgive you. Because of you remove, this forgiveness is removal from your memory system, your mind of man, those things which you projected into your brain's image of your brother. You must own those and remove those in order to be free of perception, in order to be free of carbon-based memory. Does that give you a picture of what you were looking for? Is that clarifying, making sense?
A little bit more. Nice to have you, Michael.
Loud and clear.
Okay. I would like to just be sure I understood, I heard correctly. You mentioned just a few moments ago about what was taught in university, and I think the number was 85%. Could you?
85%. This goes back about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they said 85% of what had been taught to date at a university level was had been proven false.
Wow. That is staggering. Okay, appreciate that. Now back to in the more beginning of your explanation. You mentioned about 95% of the universe is dark matter, is what science is telling us. Correct?
Right. Yes.
Now,
that's what it's estimated to be.
Yes. Now, would that include what is surrounding us as people on this planet? Or is that just in
yes.
deep space?
No, they're saying throughout the universe, the estimate at this point, and I don't know enough about it to know how they came to this estimate, but from a scientific point of view, they're estimating that about 95% of what exists in the universe, and that would be inside and outside and all around us, as far as the telescopes can see. You know, the latest, this new Webb telescope that's out there is showing us that the universe is an infinite number of times larger than we thought it was based on our previous telescopes and our previous science, an infinite amount larger. And I mean, they've now done away with the Big Bang, because now with this new information, they know that the Big Bang was a false theory.
That's amazing.
And I mean, the Big Bang, the Big Bang has like been science's Bible for how long? And it's gone now.
Quite a while. So I'm putting this in perspective a little bit more. 95% of what is around us is not really defined.
We don't have a clue.
We don't even have
the sensory apparatus to sense it.
And yet, our brain is only picking up 9 bits of that.
Well, our brain is able to utilize, imagine that it's a space. It's like the screen. So measurable units of electrical activity, there are 10,000 brain cells firing off. And out of that, there's room for us to see a construct made of 9 bits of that. And what drives that 9-bit construct is our goals. What selects which 9 bits our mind's going to use at any given moment is our goals. And for me, that is, when you look back 2,000 years ago, which the Greeks didn't have a clue of, what Yeshua's teaching was cancel, forgive. And the word in Aramaic for forgive is shebag, or shebek means to cancel. Cancel the driver for your errant perception, and your errant perception collapses. When it collapses in on its own footprint, and it gives you access to the underlying hidden part of your own mind. So when you cancel a goal that is driving this 9 bits of data to be used, that collapses, and a good image, although it's a nasty image, is you'll remember, and everybody's familiar with the 9/11 towers when they went down. What did they do? They fell into their own footprint. Perception inside of us falls into its own footprint. Now, maybe that footprint is something that happened to us when we were 2 years old. Maybe it's something that happened to great granddad. Maybe it's something that happened 20 generations ago. And the event in the world now that is resonating out of our genetic structure, that issue that great, 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 great grandpa never was able to resolve, and now it's coming forward as a construct inside of our own minds. So here we are now in rage and grief over an event that Well, you know, just something silly happened. And here I am in rage and grief. Why am I in such rage and grief? I was talking to a gentleman yesterday, and he had a situation happen with his spouse. And she was upset about a particular thing. And it wasn't a big upset, but she verbalized that she didn't like something. And, you know, the way he shared it, we were doing some processing. It was like it wasn't any really big deal, but it was a deal. And he just had a blow up in his reality structure. And he had been abused as a child by his mother, things like being tied to a chair and beaten. And so he's been doing this work for some time. So he figured, well, you know, this has got something to do with mother and being beaten, being abused. And his response to this thing that wasn't that big an event for his wife was, okay, then I'm just going to go out and live in the woods by myself. And I pointed out, so with such a strong reaction, what you've got going on here is a power person dynamic. Now, the way you tell who your power person was, we can have many power person dynamics within us, but in any given event, the way you can tell who your power person was is that your mind prompts you to do the behavior that your power person did that you hated the most. The prompt from his mind was to leave. Guess who used to leave? His father. His father would leave and literally disappear from the family home for years and come back only to, in his words, and I quote this, only to beat his mother up and to beat him up, and then he'd leave again. So here he is thinking it's about abuse with his mother, but what it really came down to as we processed through it, what really came down to was here he is going back, dad and mom have a fight, and dad leaves for years. And what does he want to do? I'm just going to go out and live in the woods. I'm leaving forever. And there's the power person dynamic coming from carbon-based memory. And does his mother need to be forgiven? No. Does his father need to be forgiven? No. Does his spouse need to be forgiven? No. Does he need to be forgiven? No. But he needs to forgive as to this reality of leaving in response to something he doesn't like. And when he removes that, then he's able to step back into a deeper, more connected relationship with his beloved than he had before the event happened, if he understands what forgiveness means. But the Greeks didn't give us that. They told us, well, you know, if you're really hurting like that, of course, it was your spouse's fault for saying what she said, so you just need to forgive her. He could forgive her till the cows come home. It's never going to change that power person dynamic with his father leaving for years. How's he ever going to find what's at the root of it? Well, he had a goal for his wife. What was his goal? Now, cancel that goal that's driving your perception to prompt you to leave that relationship in your home forever, and you'll find what's underneath it. And to me, more and more as I work with this, the genius of what Yeshua gave us in how to forgive is beyond monumental. How to collapse perception so that when it drops into his footprint, we have an opportunity to capture what's in us that we've put into our brain's image of our brothers. And we get to remove those things from us and get free of those dynamics. So what I suggested was, okay, so now your job will be to get out the power person worksheet and go to work on what that dynamic, the depths of that dynamic with your power person, which in this case was dad.
I know myself, I have a lot of work to do in that area. jumping
You're not
back
alone.
To thank you. Jumping back to our perception and realities, I have really processed a lot on this, especially over the last couple of years with family situations. And it's interesting you bring up this man with his wife, because I've been away from my former for many, many, many years, and I continue to now and then get hate mail or hate texts from her, and I just got one this morning, on something that happened in 1995, amongst a few other things. So, let me ask this. Let's take it away from so much a personal application and bring it to the accident situation. I know you've talked about that. Many people have talked about that, how several people could be watching an accident scene take place and come away from that with many different ideas of what happened and who's at fault.
Many different constructs, many different realities. There'll be as many realities as there are people that observe the accident.
Okay. And actuality is these two cars banged and there was a collision. Would that be
right?
Reasonable bet? Okay. And I take this and I look even further. I look at our world situation, things we're all facing. And another conversation would be, how did we get there? But taking it back into our perceptions at the accident, how could we all come together better on any of these situations that we are observing, experiencing, you know, families experience things, they seeing things so differently, even among siblings. How is it possible? Where's the pathway to come together more on what we're experiencing, what we're perceiving? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. My take is there is one singular central reason why on planet Earth we have starvation, why we have war, why we have murder, why we have divorce, why we have family separation, why we have hate, and why we have terrorism. There's only one reason. And that is that people do not have the tool of forgiveness. And once some form of hostility or fear-based energy enters into a particular person's energy field, until they can remove that, it is going to come back into distort perception over and over and over again. If we can hand that person a true understanding of what forgiveness is, then what will happen, the root causes, the rage and the fear, the guilt and the blame that is at the root of starvation, divorce, murder, and war, will be removed in each individual. And when that happens, the being that's behind the scenes, the true human being, will show up in their own physiology and in their own lives. And they will connect with other beings who have done the same. And one of the attributes, aside from the present being the presence of active love, of each of us as humans is compassion. And when we displace constructs based in hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, blame, drama, and trauma with compassion, then the whole game changes. Now, there's a physicist who lived 2,000 years ago that said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. Now, this was a physicist talking about physics. It wasn't a baker talking about bread. And what he was saying is, if we can get enough human beings to do the work of forgiveness, that they show up in their own physiology as love and compassion, and enough people do that piece of work, a critical mass, then the entrance in a stronger form of that energy of the active presence of love and compassion, connecting through other humans who have done the same, will create a critical mass energy shift where that energy will become so powerfully influential that next day 7.5 billion people will wake up as compassion and love. So he was talking critical mass in physics. A little leavening leavens the whole loaf. You know, I'm doing a physics experiment and I have this substance. And this substance has these characteristics. And I put it in the test tube, and I put one drop of a totally different substance into it, and nothing happens. And I put two drops, and nothing happens. And I put three, and I put 10, and I put 100, and I put 1,000 drops in, and nothing has changed in that substance in the test tube. I put drop number 1,001 into the test tube, and the whole structure of the substance in the test tube changes. That's critical mass. So my take is that this physicist, Yeshua, was saying, if we can just get enough people through the gate, not people who go around judging other people and telling people what's wrong with them and what's wrong with the world and then trying to create a Christian national nation. That's not what he was asking for. He was saying when enough people will do the work of showing up in their own physiology, in their own minds, whatever's happening in the world, whether it's their family system, their cultural system, or whatever catastrophe has happened in the world, if they'll show up as the active presence of love and compassion, they will become the leavening that leavens the whole loaf of humanity. That's the only hope of recovery from the mass insanity that's going on in the world today, would be my take.
So it's not a stretch then for us that are attempting to do our work, the more that happens, the more people that begin this work is going to lead to this
critical mass shift.
World over, that is.
Critical mass, exactly. Enough people showing up again. You know, if you think of the world as a test tube, and you know, each person who comes in and is brainwashed from childhood up to believing, yes, it's all their fault, you know, by the age of 4, virtually every person in this culture is a card-carrying member of the One World Universal Religion of Blame. It's always everybody else's fault, and they're always on the lookout for what's going wrong, what happened to them, who's doing it to them, and it's all somebody else's fault, and they have nothing to do with it. That's the search of people who belong to the One World Religion of Blame. Conspiracies all over the place, and everybody's out to get them because they're creating what they're creating out of their own unconscious dynamics. And they're projecting those unconscious dynamics into their brain's image of someone else, so there's always somebody else to blame. When we can get people to give up their membership card in that religion and move into choosing to function as the active presence of love and compassion, and bringing that love and compassion to the one that yesterday they thought was the conspiratorial leader that was going to destroy the world, right up to and including Satan, to bring the mind of compassion and love to Satan, means Satan's going to transform. In the sense of the world idea of Satan. Now, if you go to the Aramaic idea of Satan, Satan means the resistor, one who misleads. And you look at the average person who's got a finger pointed at everybody in the world, and you say, well, you know, I noticed you've been doing that for a lot of years. Do you ever think that maybe that's about you, that it's not about them? And you watch that person when you ask them to take responsibility, to give up their membership in the One World Universal Religion of Blame, and they'll say, no, wait a minute, Notice that's the resistance phase of the Satan in them. And then they'll tell you who the problem really is. And the name of the person who's the problem is always them. It's always somebody else. They're trapped in Satan. Most of the world today is literally, in the Aramaic sense, not the Greek mythology, keep people in terror and fear sense, but in the Aramaic sense, most people are living in Satan. And they've always got somebody else to blame. When I'm able to, even if I think somebody else is the problem, can I show up as a space? Can I maintain my own human life and show up in my physiology as the active presence of love and compassion, even for Satan, where I'm facing this creature face to face? Can I do that? Then I become part of the world healing. Until then, I'm a contributor to its downfall.
That to me is an exciting reason not only to do my own work and assist myself and the others around me to a better place, but we're also contributing to the world shift.
Critical mass.
And
critical mass.
I know you
and to me,
spoke about that.
Go ahead.
I know you've spoken about that before, the critical mass, but really digesting it today. Thank you.
Awesome. You know, there's right here at this juncture in our conversation, there's a really powerful example in the ancient scriptures with Yeshua. And there's, you know, he goes into the Garden of Gethsemane, and we're told he sweats blood. Now, as a naturopathic physician, if I saw someone sweating blood and breathing and standing as a space of love, I'd say, wow, now there's a healing crisis. And Yeshua comes out of the Garden of Gethsemane, and there's Peter, his head henchman, and there's the archenemy, you know, the representative Satan, the high priest servant. This is Satan in form in the context of that story. And what's Peter doing? Peter is the representative of the one world universal religion of blame. He's a card-carrying member, and he's going to kill the high priest servant. What does Yeshua say to him? First of all, he gives him a very powerful lesson. If the world could hear this one, the world would change in an instant. He says, Peter, if you live by the sword, you will die by the sword. In other words, whatever energy other than love you engage in is what will kill you. So he gives him that warning. And then he says, get thee behind me, Satan, for thou art an offense to me. For you think in the mind of man. You're in your carbon-based memory. You're in your one-world, universal, card-carrying membership of the world, the religion of blame, and you think the high priest servant is a problem here. Get out of my way. Because you're perceiving not the truth of what I have set up here. You are perceiving out of your own limited carbon-based memory. You're trapped in Satan. And then he turns to the high priest servant who's just been wounded by Peter with the sword. You know, Peter's going for the guy's head, and he just gets an ear. And what does Yeshua do? He does what an actual human being would do when he sees a person who's injured. He reaches out from a space of love and compassion and heals the man that's about to mercilessly have him slaughtered. And he knows what this guy's about to do to him. But what does he do? He's in the most dire circumstance a human could be in, and he functions as a human being. He offers love, support, and healing to the man who's going to have him murdered. Now, I've had people who've said to me, well, Michael, that's an interesting interpretation, but did you notice that doing that got him dead? And I say, yes, I noticed that doing that got him dead. Did you notice they couldn't keep him that way? That's what he came to teach us. Now, what did the world mind do? What did Satan's mind do with that? Oh, suffering, death, hang on the cross. That's the way to salvation. No, that's Satan's interpretation. That's the world mind's interpretation. He demonstrated exactly what the power of living as the active presence of love, of actually maintaining this human life in the presence of threat. And he reached out and healed the man who was going to have him mercilessly slaughtered, and they couldn't kill him because they couldn't steal his human life. They could destroy his body, which they did pretty effectively, but because they couldn't take away his human life, the active presence of love and compassion in him, they couldn't destroy him. They could only destroy his body, and it took 3 days to rebuild it. Just a slightly different message than, let's go suffer. And he's suffering for you. No, you drove in the nails with your sins. That whole hogwash story that totally destroys what Yeshua was really here to do and really here to offer.
And just offers more.
It wasn't about suffering. It was about the power of living as active presence, love, and compassion as a human being.
It's all that brings condemnation and fear and further perpetuates the whole world problem.
You got it.
Yeah.
Hey, so, you get that little kid in a guilt place, you drove in the nails into Jesus' cross, you did it?
Yeah.
Well, you got that person in fear for life. Of course, if you read through the scriptures, you hear them say well over 300 times, fear not. Yeshua at least 15 times says, fear not, or a variation on those words, but that basic idea. And yet we have people running around. I mean, we have actual ministers who proclaim to be Christian, and they're saying, fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. I mean, what? Surely you jest. But you hear that at every turn. I mean, all over the country. Because people are living, and here's a perfect example of the difference between actuality and perception. People are living in a perceptual construct for which they have brain cells. And the fear of brainwashing, which the very scriptures that these people proclaim they're here to stand for, the fear of brainwashing is so deep that it's perpetuated over and over and over again. He didn't come to teach the power of fear, he came to teach the power of love. Of living, and not love as sexual athletics or putting your head on a chopping block and self-sacrifice, but to inform people that their actual human life, and all you have to do to verify that is hold the newborn child. If you tap into the newborn child's essence, you know what human life is. That's what's so precious. That's what needs to be held to regardless of what's happening in the world. And with most people, there's a generational pattern called self that is based in that hostility and fear. And Yeshua said that self has to go. He said, in order for you, being love and compassion, created essence of the Creator, in order for you to live, that self has got to die. That self has got to go. So how do you get rid of that self? There's only one tool to do it with. Called forgiveness. And he taught the technology for how to do that. So what is it that I can't show up for and maintain my human life? That's my work. Now, the world mind, carbon-based memory, Adam's mind will say, yeah, that's what, boy, what, look what they've done. Boy, nobody could show up for that. Look what they've done. Look what their problem is. Look what they need. Excuse me, the person pointing the finger is the one who has the work to do. What I can't show up as active present love for is my work. Now, do they have work to do too? Probably, likely, but their work's none of my damn business. If I'm not in my human life, what they're doing, I can't even start to conceive of. Because I'm in my actual constructs rather than in the actuality of being a human being.
I've been more exposed to this work and looking out, there's many people out in the space and speaking about how to get out of our heads into our hearts. And to me, I resonate that with this work.
That's it, exactly.
Yes. And so what I'd like to ask is, seems to be more and more and more people speaking about this. It may not be in the actual word forgiveness, but on, along similar lines. Any thought on what it's going to look like? I know many of us struggle just in our daily lives with doing the work. And you have spoken of the tipping point where you shift the world over. Does that mean that the ones right now that are at the accident condemning maybe a woman driver, maybe a different person, maybe this, maybe that, that they will have a more quick change of heart versus some of the paths that many of us are taking now and kind of struggling each day with our work? How do you see that?
Back about 30 years ago, I started a program in Delray Beach, Florida, at the Unity School there. There was a kindergarten to grade 8 school. And it was called Lessons in Living, and it's actually a program that's still going on now 30 years later, years after I left there. I was very delighted a few years ago when I was down there, and it was still going on. The first lesson that we taught when we went in with Lessons in Living, it was kind of a takeoff on Laws of Living that we developed for the prison program. The first lesson we taught to those kids, like right from kindergarten, was, and a line that's in the worksheet, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. If I can bring the actual presence of my human life as active present love forward into the world, then the person who's in the worst trauma, pain, the idea of love has been buried so deeply in their family system that it hasn't been seen for 100 generations. It's been nothing but war and drugs and alcohol and murder and cheating and suicide. If I can stand strongly enough as the presence of love, because they're made of the same stuff I am, sooner or later, if I'm committed enough, that resonance is going to move in them, you know, and they have no choice about it. You know, if I have a middle seat tuning fork and I hit it on a desk and I put it in front of a second middle seat tuning fork, that second middle seat tuning fork has no choice. It's a simple transfer of energy. The second tuning fork is going to start to move. If enough people stand as the presence of love, because we're all made of the same stuff, if one person is at the accident weakly holding to the place of love, everybody's locked into perception. If one person standing in the accident as conscious, active, present love, that will tend to start to draw forward a different experience for each person observing the accident. If 5 of the 6 people that are standing in love, and the 6th person who's in terror and trauma and blaming the person who made the mistake with the accident, or at least that they perceived it, and they're ready to rage and kill them, those other 5 people standing there as the active presence of love are going to very likely transform that one person's mind, because each one standing as the presence of love sets up a field that resonates or energizes the true essence of that 6th person. And they're going to have a whole lot better time, a whole lot easier time showing up as love than they would otherwise. That's the critical mass principle.
Yes, that is wonderful. I was going to ask that exact question. How do we bring the people together in the accident? And you just explained that. So when we're at a situation like this, holding the place of love is going to help not only myself, we're going to help the others that are involved or in that general place also.
Exactly.
And
yeah, it's like if I stand as that presence and look out through the eyes of the active presence above, knowing who's in front of me, even though they're acting like a raging maniac, I can resonate and at least bring forward the possibility that the truth of who they are as love and compassion starts to be energized and break through their own wall of pain and trauma.
Way, that is the way to bring many together, and in doing so, it's going to help everyone's quote reality or perception come closer together to actuality.
Precisely.
That would be exactly.
And each one who steps up to the plate, again, it's like our test tube. I put one drop of the substance in, nothing happens. I put two, I put three, I put 10, I put 100, I put 500, I put 1,000, I put 2,000, I put three. It wasn't until I got to the 10,000th drop. Boom. The whole content of the test tube changed. Everything was transformed. That's critical mass. That's the leavening that leavens the whole loaf.
And that is a beautiful day when that begins to happen.
That's a beautiful day. And that's what we're here. That's what I've been working for the last 50 years to put forward into the world and make available.
I see we're coming up on the end of the show, and I just want to thank you and Jeannie and folks like Kim and many others that are out there bringing this message forward for all of us.
Well, absolutely holding space, my friend, and we visualize your journey. I understand you're coming into a storm area, being safe, and that you're surrounded in a light, and that everything that you need to handle when you get back home is surrounded in the power and the presence of that active love, and that, you know, that the light of the Creator surrounds you, the actual presence of the love of the Creator enfolds you, the power of the Creator protects you, and that presence watches over you.
Most gracious, much, much appreciation to you. So grateful for this time and your wonderful intentions, Michael.
All right, my friend, we're breathing with you and accompanying you on your journey there.
Thank you once again, and much appreciation. We'll be in touch.
All right, take care. Lots of love and blessings. Thank you, buddy, for joining us. Delight to have you with us, and we hold the space to create the best year yet of your eternal life. It is what the world needs, and you have the opportunity to give it. Holding space. Blessings. Bye-bye.